ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय देहंग देहा विवरे जतरंग जतिरंगि जतिरंगिनाश्रि विन्मूत्रकूपपतितो वृषतप्तदेहा ईच्छन् इतो विशासितुं गणयन् स्वमासान् निवास्यते कृपनधीर् भगवान् खदानु देहन्य देहा विवरे जतराग्नि आश्रिग विन्मूत्रकूपपतितो वृषतप्त देहा ईच्छन् इतो विशासितुं गणयन् स्वमासान् निर्वास्यते कृपनधीर् भगवान् खदानु देहन्य देहा विभरे जतराग्नि आश्रि विन्मूत्रकूपपतितो वृषतप्तदेहा ईच्छन् इतो विशासितुं गणयन् स्वमासान् निर्वास्यते कृपनधीर् भगवान् खदानु देहि embodied soul अन्यदेहा of another body, vivare, in the abdomen, jatara, of the stomach, agnina, by the fire, asrik, of blood, vit, of stool, mutra, and urine, kupa, in a pool, patita, fallen, Vrisha, strongly. Tapta, scorched. Deha, his body. Ichan, desiring. Itaha, from that place. Vivashitum, to get out. Ganayan, counting. Svamasan, his months. Nirashyate, will be released. Kripana dihi, person of miserly intelligence. Bhagavan, O Lord. Kada, when? Nu, indeed. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Fallen into the pool of blood, stool and urine, within the abdomen of his mother, his own body scorched by the mother's gastric fire. The embodied soul, anxious to get out, counts his months and prays, O my Lord, when shall I, a wretched soul, be released from this confinement? Please repeat. Fallen into a pool of blood, stool and urine, within the abdomen of his mother, his own body scorched by the mother's gastric fire. The embodied soul, anxious to get out, counts his months and prays. O my Lord, when shall I, a wretched soul, be released from this confinement? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The precarious condition of the living entity within the womb of his mother is described here. On one side of where the child is floating is the heat of gastric fire, and on the other side is urine, stool and blood, and discharges. After 7 months, the child who has regained his consciousness, feels the horrible condition of his existence, and he prays to the Lord. Counting the months until his release, he becomes greatly anxious to get out of this confinement. So-called civilized man does not take account of this horrible condition of life, and sometimes for the purpose of sense gratification, he tries to kill the child by methods of contraception and abortion. Unserious about the horrible condition within the womb, such persons continue in materialism, grossly misusing the chance of the human form of life. So the word kripana di is significant in this verse. Di means intelligence and kripana means miserly. Conditioned life is for persons who are of miserly intelligence or who do not properly utilize their intelligence. In the human form of life, the intelligence is developed and one has to utilize that developed intelligence to get out of the cycle of birth and death. One who does not do so is a miser. Just like a person who has immense wealth but does not utilize it, simply keeping it to see. A person who does not actually utilize his human intelligence to get out of the clutches of Maya, the cycle of birth and death, is accepted as miserly. The exact opposite of miserly is udara, or very magnanimous. A Brahmana is called udara because he utilizes his human intelligence for spiritual realization. He uses that intelligence to preach Krishna consciousness for the benefit of the public, and therefore he is magnanimous. Translation: fallen into a pool of blood, stool and urine within the abdomen of his mother. His own body scorched by the mother's gastric fire. The embodied soul, anxious to get out, counts his months and prays, "O my Lord, when shall I, a wretched soul, be released from this confinement?" So, Lord Kapiladev is describing in these chapters the devolution of the soul and also the evolution of the soul, going down and coming up again. So this is going on, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes. The living entity is wandering through countless births and deaths in the material world, until that soul gets the association of the devotee, whereby by such mercy the living entity can become released. Now, in this particular history, we hear how the soul is coming up to the human form and taking birth in the womb of his mother. And suffering so much. The gastric fires of the mother on one side, the stool and urine, pus and blood on the other side. The suffering must be horrific. Now, we don't remember that, but surely we've all gone through it. And it's quite interesting, actually. But we've all been put into very difficult, troubling situations. But we can't imagine how troubling this is. And Prabhupada describes it as being like packed up in a bag. If someone got you now and put you into a sack, tied you up, you couldn't move, and then tied the sack up, and you'd have to stay there for 9-10 months. So that would be unbearable. But somehow or other, the conditioned soul is able to bear such things. Actually, he can't bear those things until about 7 months. Described here, the 7 months, then time comes, consciousness awakens, he awakens. And places Prabhupada describes this term in the womb of unconsciousness. Simply, it's a death. It's a death, it's a deep kind of sleep. But then, after 7 months, the child awakens within the womb and surrounded by hellish condition, absolutely hellish condition. So hellish that if that particular living entity is fortunate, he begins to pray to the Supreme Lord. As we see in our experience here, under certain conditions, everyone prays to the Supreme Lord, even if they've gone through a life of complete forgetfulness. When the troubles come, they all pray to God, "Oh, please help me." If it's not from their own troubles, perhaps from their troubles from their siblings or wife or husband is dying, the wife is praying, "Oh God, please save him. Please make him better. Please help him. Gone through the whole life basically without any God consciousness. Now all of a sudden there's a renewal, a resurgence of God consciousness. But it doesn't last for very long. But that's because it's natural. Because the soul is by nature part and parcel of God. It can be covered over from time to time. Deeply covered over. But there are times when the consciousness becomes a little awakened. Remembers. Now here, this is interesting in this particular verse because this particular living entity which the Lord Kapiladeva is describing, he's gone, due to sinful activity described in previous chapter, he's gone down, gone to the hellish planets, actually it's described. Describes all the different kind of hellish reactions that one may receive due to one's own karma. Giving trouble to others, then in certain ways, very hellish sometimes, we can give trouble to others because of our attachment to our own position, our own self. We cause trouble to others to enjoy and to become very severe for others. Anyway, there's karmic reaction for all that. And sometimes a living entity cannot bear such karmic reaction for what they do, so they have to experience it through some subtle means, and that's through the hellish planets. They go to the hellish planets and they suffer for many, 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 it appears like eternity, but it's not. It's not eternity. They pass through and then they come to, Prabhupada describes, they learn how to suffer in the hellish planets. They learn how to suffer. So, and then according to karma, we may take birth according to our previous activities in an animal species that we've been conditioned to enjoy. It's like, say for example, you're in a nightmare and you're forced to eat your own flesh. You know, you're forced to eat your own stool and urine. No. There are living entities that actually have become so conditioned that they do that without any trouble. And how do they do that? Because they've become conditioned by these kinds of punishments, these nightmares that they go through. Right? So then they come up, according to their karma, they may take birth as a hog, and then they can happily eat stool and urine. Or a tiger, and you happily eat the flesh of others. Right? For us, you can imagine they're now conditioned now, vegetarian devotees, if someone forces you to eat the flesh of something that's disgusting, we can't imagine it, actually, what kind of suffering that is. But still, by conditioning, we can do anything. We can stoop to any condition by conditioning. And here it's described that even though the living entity becomes awakened and by his suffering in the womb, he becomes momentarily God conscious, praying for release. And not only that, he seems to be able to remember why he's there. It's probably described as a repentant soul. When one becomes a repentant soul due to the suffering, then they can make some kind of conscious decision to rectify themselves. That's the whole idea of the jail system. That you're put into jail because you've done something wrong, but the idea should be that you become repentant and start to rectify yourself. And when one is properly rectified, then they can again go out and live in the free world without causing trouble to others. So one has to experience or come to the point of repentance and take responsibility for one's own misdeeds. No one else's fault. We may blame others for what we, you know, I was forced to do that because of that. But no, actually. And the time comes when our karma is looking us in the face or we're experiencing it directly, we'll realize, especially devotees, if we ever get to that situation, could be, who knows. But the devotee by nature will become repentant. And due to that repentance, the Lord sometimes gives his mercy. Actually, in this case, the Lord gives his mercy to the conditioned soul by allowing him to remember why he's there. In the Gita, we describe Krishna gives knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So when the time comes, Krishna knows, as a super soul, knows when to give this remembrance for the benefit of the conditioned soul. But still, conditioning is so strong because we see that he becomes so repentant and so full of self-remorse and praise to the Lord that, yes, I'm such a fallen, wretched soul. I've become wretched. Please help me in this condition. And then all of a sudden, within the womb, the winds start to come. And something starts going on. Right? So he gets out by Krishna's mercy. Okay, Krishna lets him out. So by nature's arrangement, he goes through and takes birth. But immediately, even though he was somewhat God-conscious within the womb, what happens? Describe, we'll read about it. What happens? He becomes conditioned again, just like that. It's described that the force of childbirth is so traumatic, not only for the mother, but for the child. Of course, we hear stories, I've no experience in this life, can't remember, but you know, birth for the mother is so traumatic, it's nothing can compare to it. So painful, nothing can compare to it. And what to speak of the poor child coming out, you know, that must be even much worse. And it's described here. So forceful, so much suffering, that the living entity forgets what just took place within the womb. Becomes momentarily unconscious of all that. And then what happens? He or she is surrounded by all kinds of diversions. You know, the father is waiting there, smiling face. The mother is, oh, beautiful baby, takes to the heart. Immediately takes to the breast. The hunger is there. And then the child is, even though there's still suffering going on, probably describes it, you know, the child is crying. The parents really don't know why. But just come out of a completely, you know, confined space, and now it's, you know, in this whatever condition it's in. But it's not a natural space for a soul. It's described that the soul is a particular substance, and when the soul is in contact with matter, it's an incompatible situation. Very incompatible. No matter if it's in a heavenly condition or a hellish condition, it's incompatible. So there's all types of incompatible situations the living entity is experiencing. This is one of them. We've all gone through it. But we see how strong this material nature is and how easily we can forget our Krishna consciousness. And this is a lesson for devotees. We can easily forget our Krishna consciousness and become enamored by our surroundings. And the practice of devotional service is to help us through that. We have regulative principles which we follow, like even chanting prescribed number of rounds, 16 rounds every day. That's one part of the direction, but the other part is do them attentively. And the devotees have made an arrangement for us to be able to do them attentively by giving us each other's association and doing it in an area by which it's very difficult to become diverted from what we're doing. Because the circumstances make it easy for us to forget our Krishna consciousness. The material world makes it easy for us to forget our Krishna consciousness. That's why association of devotees is so important. And we live our lives as devotees experiencing this. Remembrance and forgetfulness. By Krishna's mercy we remember him. By Krishna's mercy we forget him. It's all Krishna's mercy. But we should learn by experience. We shouldn't be so foolish that it takes so long to learn. And it's easy to come every morning to associate with devotees, to make that time of the day where you're not deviated by whatever the material world surrounding us is offering. That is our practice, to become meditative, to become mindful of Krishna. And not just when they're suffering. You know? In the Gita, it's described four types of pious persons. This living entity must be pious. At previous verses it said that his fortunate living entity comes to remember his past grievous activities and comes to remember the Supreme Lord and prays to him severely with a repentant heart to please help me. So this type of person in the Gita is described, takes shelter of God. What is that? Who is that? There's four types, isn't it? So four types of persons take shelter of me. Pious persons take shelter of me. So what's the first type? Yeah, that's well, I don't know if it's the first type, but it is one type, yeah. And this is this type. In distressed condition, one takes shelter. Right. And this is one we're interested in today. But Prabhupada goes on in the purport to describe that those persons are not pure devotees. Right? Pure devotional service is something different. Pure devotional service is what we're aspiring for. And that is to engage, to reawaken our intrinsic, original, eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is free from all kinds of selfish motives. Right? And in that state, we will experience actual love of God. So that's our goal. But if it's motivated, if our service or desire to serve Krishna is motivated, it's not considered pure. Right? Not considered pure. In other words, there should be no expectation of reward. And there should be no contamination of mental speculation. Then our devotion to Krishna, our fructifies in a transcendental way. If our devotion is tinged with materialistic desires, and it won't fructify, our activities in devotion won't fructify in a transcendental way. We may get the results Krishna will give us. He may or may not, but still, everything's coming from the Supreme Lord. So we may get what we want after many, many years. Krishna may give, but it's not going to give us love of God. So the association of devotees and the process by which the pure devotees have given us within the material world to attain actual pure love of God is this practice of bhakti, practice of sarana. And that's all we have. It's coming from the mercy of Prabhupada. That's all we have to allow us to transcend our suffering condition. That's all we have. So we have to really take advantage of that. It's so rare. Like, we may have been pious. You know, we may have prayed many, many lives, you know, for salvation or for whatever. But what happens? Immediately we forget. Material nature forces us to forget. It comes out of the womb, immediately forget. So what is it that actually... what's the difference? What helps us not to forget? The mercy of the pure devotee. Because in the material world, everything is aversion from Krishna consciousness. Everything. But sometimes, somewhere in the Krishna allows devotional service to be alive and well, and it's carried by the pure devotees. So by the association of the pure devotees, we are protected from this diversion. You know, it's only because Prabhupada gave us this program that we're able to be somewhat not attracted to the material world, somewhat protected from the alluring nature of the material world. You know, we can go, like all of us here, we can become absorbed in Krishna consciousness, very nice, all happy, ecstasy, chanting, dancing, we walk out and go to work, forget the whole thing. we go out, you know, and we just start looking at the shops, we start shopping here, you know, forget the whole thing. Until we come back again, back in ecstasy again. So it's like our lives are like that, and gradually we make more and more progress, only by the mercy of Krishna, through the mercy of the pure devotees. Well, very, very rare. So rare. You know. It's actually an inconceivable thing. You can't imagine how rare the association of a pure devotee is that can give us that secret to go back home, back to Godhead. To give us the secret, because it's nothing else will allow us to. You know, our religious endeavors may take us to the heavenly planets. You know, to the heart. They may even take us to perhaps liberation. But even liberation is a selfish thing. And because we haven't purified ourselves of selfishness, because nothing has really kind of attracted us more than our own self. You know, Krishna is Madan Mohan. He's able to attract purely. Right? But we can even go up to liberation. If there's no Krishna, then we're still thinking of ourselves, I am one. I am buzzing in the Brahmajyoti. I am in ecstasy. It's all still I. Right? So then what do we do? We might get a little kind of, you know, then we start thinking, I am self-realized. Oh, yes. I better, you know,
What about everyone else? There's a little bit of compassion. They should also know that they're God. Initial buzzing energy. And then they come down and start preaching. They get attracted to the material energy again. Come back to the material world. So many go, Prabhupada describes the Brahmajyoti realization. It's just a beginning aspect of seeing a tiny spark of the glory of the actual God. But when we see that spark, we think, oh, that is me. Because we haven't purified ourselves of selfishness. Not pure. So then we start to think in terms of, you know, still selfishness. Oh, I'll come back down and I'll do some teaching, preaching. Sadhu. You know, like that. Still self-motivated. I'm sadhu. I'm self-realized. You know, follow me like that. The living entity can't escape this prison of selfish desire unless they have the association of the pure devotee. Now, the association of the pure devotee is so powerful that it's able to transform our selfish desire into desire to become a pure devotee ourselves. Because we see, here's the example. There's so many examples of motivated religionists in our world, and they don't really attract us. But here's the example of the pure devotee walking through the material world, which is full of diversions and attachments, but able to remain fixed in loving Krishna and serving Krishna without deviation. That's what attracts us. We can all be like that. It will take time, but the only way you can be like that is by keeping in the close association of others who are like that. There's so many examples. Prabhupada led the way. There are many devotees, you know, on a high level of pure devotional service that are able to walk in the material world, not be affected by it because they're 100% fixed in their business here in the service of the Lord. That's what's attracting us to help to purify ourselves as well. So this poor living entity, he's kind of was a bit Krishna conscious there for a while, and then all of a sudden he's burst out in the material. There's no one there to help him. And the suffering is pretty great. He falls again into forgetfulness because there's no association. His association is his Guru Gaga mother, you know, and his father. Now you're my progeny. You'll become like me. You know, teach him all kinds of selfish, you know, how to become materialistic. So association is the most important thing, and it's so powerful. What's that verse? Sadhusanga, sava. Sastra hoy, lava matra, sadhusanga, sarvasiddha hoy. Yeah, just by a moment's association with the real devotee, who is walking through the world, one moment's association is enough to set one on the path back home, back to Godhead, because that devotee doesn't give materialistic things. When you go to touch the feet of the pure devotee, or, you know, what Prabhupada said, this one in the train, Prabhupada was in the train, and these people came in the train and said, oh, sadhu, sadhu, please give me your blessings. Please give me your blessings. So the nature is that, you know, the expectation is that, yes, you have a good life, you know, whatever it is. Prabhupada says, I'll give you a blessing, shaved head. That is my blessing. Yes, okay, shaved head. Shave your head, you know. That is my blessing. Follow the instructions of the pure devotee. Give up the selfish sense gratification, and then you'll get the blessings of Krishna. So even one moment's association with such a soul has created such a huge movement now in the world, whereby others are following in the footsteps, pure devotee, becoming also, and it's spreading like that. So now there is a wonderful opportunity described here. It's a wonderful opportunity for our intelligence to become purified because there's so much association now in this particular time, so much association of pure devotional service for us to be benefited. And we have to become, I can't read this anymore, hold on. We have to become, our intelligence has to be, formerly it's kripana, miserly. Right? Because it's always thinking of how to do this for myself, or for my family, extended nation, whatever. But the intelligence has to become, what's the word here? Udara, very magnanimous. Now, Prabhupada gives an example like a miser. A miser has so much, may have so much wealth, but if they're a miser, all they like to do is simply look at it. What it says here. They don't even want to spend it. They want to look at it. That's like, I think, way back in the time, there was one character, his name was, what was his name? Scrooge McDuck. Anyone remember Scrooge McDuck?
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. So he was accumulating so much wealth, he just liked wealth, and he just have a big room full of it, and he'd just go and dive in it and swim in it. Like with Scrooge McDuck. But he wouldn't give anything away to anyone. Especially his family. Even his family wouldn't give away. Anyway, he was nine. He was the personification of miserly. Right? So he has so much, he has everything, but he just likes to look at it. So in the human form of life, we have so much. Krishna has given us so much. He's given us human intelligence, which allows us to inquire into the nature of God and be able to reawaken Krishna's given that. He's given us a wonderful, this intelligence, human intelligence is a rare jewel. But what do we want to do? We just want to look at it. Think it's, you know, for us, it's me. This intelligence is me. Right. We won't utilize it. What's bigger, our intelligence? Whatever we get, it's like that. We just like to, you know, accumulate more and more and more, and we won't use it. But one who does not utilize their intelligence is a miser. Just like a person has immense wealth, but does not utilize it, he's simply keeping it to look at, to see. So a person who does not actually utilize his human intelligence to get out of the clutches of Maya, the cycle of birth and death, is certainly miserly, and the exact opposite of this miser is Udara, very magnanimous. So a Brahmana, spiritualist, is called Udara because he utilizes his human intelligence for spiritual realization. He uses that intelligence to preach Krishna consciousness for the benefit of the public, and therefore he is magnanimous. So that's the real meaning of magnanimity. So, is there any questions or comments? Yes.
Can I have a microphone?
You can have a microphone? We can hear. Can we hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can hear.
You are telling, Bhagavatam is giving a very graphic picture of how the labor takes place. But there are a lot of delayed labor problems. Sometimes head presentation is not there. Beach presentation. The buttocks present. The cervix is directed completely. Baby cannot come out because the buttock is so big. So we have to do cesarean section. There will be cord prolapse. The connection between the baby and the mother. The cord prolapses in that part. So the baby can't come out.
Yeah, that's a suffering.
So many complications.
Yeah.
So that's why Prabhupada is giving us such a great picture that we have to be Krishna conscious. Get out of the material world. I'll tell you my story personally. I've told many times. When I was 5 years old, my mother used to tell me, if you don't become a devotee, then you have to go to another womb, which can be a human womb or an animal womb. And you have to suffer so much. So you have to become, and she used to say, Punram Ijanini, Yatrina Shayanam, Trai Marale, Trai Marale. There's so much trouble. So much problem. That's why I'm taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada, who has given a very graphic picture. If you don't become Krishna conscious, there is no way you can get out. And the most important is Shraddha. Our Shraddha is most important than Shraddha.
So you had good fortune of a Sadhu Sangha. Your mother was Sadhu, she told you, from the very beginning. So that's very good.
So many books.
Yeah, exactly. We maybe have. Hold on. there's forums for this kind of sangha. So hold on.
You know, simple thing.
Yeah.
It's a complicated labor. Yeah. It's a very big subject. Huge subject now.
Okay.
It's not my field, but I know a little bit. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Very good.
We have to be. Everybody has to be Krishna conscious. And we have to spread this message to everyone.
Hare Krishna.
Whomsoever becomes, that's why Mahaprabhu said.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Joshua? Atheist, well, an atheist can pray in the room. They can. But, you know, in the Gita it's described how there are four kinds of pious people, four kinds of impious people. Those that are impious generally don't take shelter. But Prabhupada also mentions even the atheist can take shelter. Even the impious can take shelter of the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. And there are many examples also of, you know, this atheism, theism, I mean, we're always seesawing between the two anyway, according to our association. Usually people become atheists because of their association. They hear a kind of a philosophy and they're attracted to it. It sounds good. And it, oh yeah, no God, that sounds good for me. They're attracted to that because that's their desire to forget God. So the atheist, you know, Krishna gives that philosophy so you can live in a kind of an illusion that there is no God. But then that can be changed by the association of a pure devotee. We can, you know.
Would the fetus actually be considered an atheist?
No, well, this particular child in the womb, it's not necessary that every living entity in the womb prays like this, because previous verses described, if the living entity is fortunate, he's able to remember in that condition, in that suffering condition, it forces him, he remembers why I'm here. So he remembers that, and then he obviously he's pious, so he starts to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not everyone that does that. But in due course of time, everyone will do it. It just depends on your circumstances. In due course of time, everyone will go through this, you know, they've fallen from their spiritual position. In due course of time, everyone will again go back home, back to Godhead. But it appears that we've been conditioned for so long in the material world, it's like Nitya Bhatta, it's eternal for us. That every living entity is purely spirit soul. And it just requires a certain tweaking, whatever, a certain condition where they can revive their Krishna consciousness again. So an atheist is not an eternal position. So you can't really say, well, an atheist, can an atheist remember Krishna? They can.
Hold on,
you've had your turn. You're going to have to Pratapa.
Is there such a thing as somebody who is so evil, like Stalin or
yeah.
Hitler, these kind of characters that are just pure evil, is there such a thing as eternally dead, that they never go back to the spiritual world, because they've been so sinful that they're eternally going to stay in the material world and suffer? Or do such personalities eventually,
yeah,
after trillions of light years of creation, do they also go back?
Yeah, they can also go back. There's no eternal damnation. The nature of the hellish experience, like that's described in the Bhagavatam, the different hellish planets, but the nature of those hellish planets are such that a living entity can purge themselves of what they've done by having to experience those hellish planets. And, you know, someone like Stalin or Hitler or something, they're probably not enough time in a span of life to be able to suffer for that, but they can condense all that in this subtle condition of the hellish planets, where you're suffering, they're throwing you off the cliff, they're ripping your arms off, and it's going on for eternity. It seems like that, but it's not eternity. It's just it's an illusion, another illusion, but the suffering is so great and long-lasting, it appears like it's eternal. So, you know, and another point is, you may think that people that are pure evil, we should be careful, because somehow they got themselves into those circumstances. Any one of us can fall down to that level, the platform. Any one of us can fall down to take birth in a tree, body of a tree, body of stone, you know, animal of some kind, you know. And then in the human form of life, we can stoop to anything if our lust is too great. If we allow it, you know. Lust is the gateway to hell. So if we allow it to burn, we stoke the fire of our lust. And people do that. They think, you know, the modern day is you know, stoke the fire of your lust and you'll be free of it. You'll be satisfied. You know? Intelligence becomes so bewildered, you know, they lose all concept of what they're doing. And people like Stalin and Hitler, they lose concept of what they're doing. They think it's right to kill, you know, to kill people because they're a certain birth, you know, nature or nationality. But they think they're doing right. Like Hiranyakashipu thought he was doing right. Didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyone of, and Hiranyakashipu, they were gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. So if they can fall down to a certain type of mentality, what to speak of us? You know, it's pretty scary.
If I can just offer a comment on what the Carpenter was saying, I heard an election some time ago. Sri Prabhupada was talking about people who abort the child. It's so simple, they never see the light of day. They put in this situation of people and they never see the light of day.
Within the womb, right? They themselves?
They stay in the womb. Yeah. They just never see the light of day. They get aborted, they get back to the womb.
Sorry, you had your hand up.
Thank you for the last. My question is that, as you mentioned, there are only pious living entities, or fortunate living entities, that will make such prayers to the Lord. My question is that, how their prayers are answered. Like, you know, does it mean that when they come out, they'll be fortunate enough to get an association of the devotee of the Lord, or the power of the Lord?
What was the question?
The question is like the pious living entities.
Yeah. Yeah.
In such a situation.
Yeah.
When it comes out, like, you know, he's overtaken by Maya and all that, he forgets everything.
Yeah.
So, but he has already prayed to the Lord. How does he pray?
Well, he's praying to the Lord. If you see that the Lord, he had remembrance of the Lord, but what was he praying for? His condition was so great that he's simply praying to get out. This verse says that. Please, I'm in such a wretched soul and I'm stuck in this condition. Please let me get out. I need to get out. He was thinking of himself. He's not thinking of, you know, and let me engage in your devotional service. You know, just let me get out of here. You know? So Krishna, okay, out you go. So birth takes place and out he goes. Out he pops. Unfortunately, he didn't take birth in the family of devotee. Because then he would have a good association carried on. Actually, one thing I've been noticing in the temple here is very, very wonderful. Speaking of kids, they're so fortunate to take birth in such nice devotional families. And you can see the enthusiasm of the children in the temple here. It's very pure. It feels pure and it feels ecstatic, you know. And the kids seem naturally inclined towards that lifestyle, which shows that they're very pious souls, you know. It's a difference between... Well, I don't know what goes on at home, but even in the temple, say there are many temples, the kids come and they're kind of, you know, forced to come in and, you know, forced to stay, you know, do this, do that, and they're just kind of doing the motions. But here the kids seem very spontaneously attracted to, probably due to the caring of their parents. They're taking birth in good families and the care that the parents have given them to train them up. And now they have some spontaneous happiness in being in the atmosphere and doing the services and chanting Hare Krishna and like that. So it's very, very good. These children are very fortunate. So, you know, they may have been in the womb at the same time and praying, please let me out, but they may have also been praying, please let me remember you. That's the difference. You know, please let me engage in your service. You know, they're born into a position where they can do like that. Okay, we have to finish. Thank you very much. Oh, God, still a problem.